Welcome to the Tipsy Tennis Podcast. I am in Gurugram, India, speaking with the director of the Women's ITF 25K. Sharmada was telling me it's a 35K, but it's actually a 25K.
Well, the prize money is $25,000, but the grading is W35 because that's the number of WTA points the winner gets. So prize money is $25,000, but the rating is W35.
Nice. So I'm here with Vishal. He's the director. So to start off, I usually like to ask my guests, how did you get started playing tennis?
It was back in school, in sixth grade, and it was too hot to play cricket. So a couple of my friends, we decided to give tennis a go. In the break period during school hours. Mm-hmm. So we started playing, and after the second day, the school coach came to me and said, "You know, I want to take you for a tennis tournament." Mm-hmm. Like, I've just held a racket 2 days back. He says, "No, you're a great athlete. You run hard, and you got 4 days to practice." Mm-hmm. And he took me for one of the biggest state championships there were, and I got to the semifinals.
Oh wow!
A kid who's never played tennis. And I was so obsessed with cricket that every time, you know, one of the players would moonball the ball and it was going way out of the baseline, I would actually drop my racket and catch it because I was so obsessed with cricket. So that's how my tennis journey started.
Oh.
And after that, you know, I just kept falling in love with the game, and here we are.
Did you ever play like ITFs or professional?
Yes, I played Davis Cup for India for 6 years.
Oh wow!
I won an Asian Games medal, which is a big thing in India, a big deal in India to win in 2002. And I think that year India won only 16 medals, so that was a big thing. And from the state of Delhi, there were only two people who got a medal. Mm-hmm. I was one of the two. So I did that. I was ranked, I think in singles I was ranked about 480. Was my highest, and doubles was about 250. Mm-hmm. But that was only after playing 8 tournaments a year, because we didn't have the money to travel and play more tournaments.
Wow.
And you know, as the rankings go, they take best 18 weeks out of a 52-week cycle. And that was my ranking after 8 tournaments. And that's all I could afford to play in.
I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, tennis is brutal in that sense where, I mean, you know, it is expensive to play. But one thing, because we hear it, and I think now it's become like a much more popular conversation of, like, you know, increase the money for the lower ranked players, because, like, even if they win, how much do they win if they win the tournament here?
They get a little under $4,000. The singles winner will get a little under $4,000.
So, like, you know, after expenses and stuff like that, they're like,
they're pretty much breaking even.
Yeah, even if you win the tournament, like, best case scenario, like,
yes,
it's tough in that sense, but also, this might be maybe a little bit unpopular opinion, where, like, to take for instance, you know, when somebody goes to college, they spend 4 years, they pay X amount of money to go to college, and then it's not even guaranteed, you know, their how they make their career. I think, like, taking something similar idea for tennis, you know, these players are, like, making the conscious decision. They understand how tough it is. They understand, you know, the financials and all of this kind of stuff, and it's like an investment in it. And, you know, I think they shouldn't complain too much.
Well, you know, actually, truth be told, tennis or sport in general is way tougher than academics. Mm-hmm. Because, see, a kid may go to college and he may invest, and he's still very likely to find a job.
Yeah.
But a tennis player could invest
their entire life.
10 years, 12 years of their entire junior career, you know, preparing for the pros, and you get to the pro level and you have one nasty injury and that is the end of your career. So in that sense, playing professional sport is way tougher than academics. Mm-hmm. And I always say academics is way easier as a pursuit also, because look, 2 + 2 will always be 4 in mathematics. Mm-hmm. It will never change. When you're playing a sport like tennis, every ball you hit is a little different. There's so many variables, there's so many different factors. So it makes it that much more challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be having a great day on court, but my opponent could be having an even better day than me. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work out for me that day. And I could be having a very, really bad day, but my opponent's having a really worse day than me. And it works out for me. So, you know, the unpredictability of sport is what makes it way tougher than if you follow the conventional path of, you know, going through a college, academics, and then finding a job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can always study and go to college when you're 40 years of age. You can't play professional sport then.
Yeah.
So you have a very limited time frame where you really need to either make it or not.
Make it or break it.
Yeah, make it or break it, if you want to say break it, but make it or not.
Okay.
You know, so then what happens? Then you have to literally restart your career. Mm-hmm. You know, once you're, if you're 27 years of age and, you know, now tennis is done for you, now what? You know, so you got to restart. So mm-hmm. that way, playing professional sport is a much tougher path to take. Mm-hmm. But it's not meant for the faint-hearted, and it's definitely meant for people who want to follow their passion in life, you know, who really want to give it something, you know, who don't, if I may say, who don't want to take the safe route of going to college and, you know, academics and get a job and stuff like that. So, yeah I mean, it's got a definite allure to it, and it's extremely satisfying for the soul, mm-hmm. you know, pursuing something you truly love and are passionate about, mm-hmm. that's really satisfying. Because professional tennis is not for everyone.
No.
But you can definitely use tennis as a way to get to college, to get to a good school, yeah. get a good education. But once you're nearing graduation, you pretty much know whether you can go pro or not. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, tennis is a great vehicle for every youngster, every junior, mm-hmm. to get themselves to a good college and then see where life takes them. If they're good enough to go pro, okay, go pro. Mm-hmm. But if you're not, now tennis has helped you get a really good education.
Yeah,
and then you can monetize that.
And for me, at least, tennis, I would even expand. I would expand it even more to, like, not only for it can take you to college, but like it could take you to so many different places. Like,
oh yeah,
the people
absolutely.
You can meet through tennis, and just the lessons you learn through pursuing like a sport. You know, the discipline, the adaptability, being able to change to adapt to changing environment all the time. If you're in a team sport, working with other people. If you're in an individual sport, having the grit to, you know, deal with things on your own, problem solve in real time.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, you know, books will teach you about things in life, and sport or tennis will teach you about life itself. Mm-hmm. How to deal with success, failure, what's the value of discipline, determination, self-belief, mm-hmm. things like that. Books can't teach you that.
No.
You know, sport will.
It's like you can read as many books as you can about the Sistine Chapel, but you'll never know what it smells like.
Yep.
How it echoes off the walls.
Yep. So from a human development perspective, sport is one of the most essential things for every child to do, mm-hmm. because what it will teach you about life, no book can teach you. Mm-hmm. You know, it will help you become a more well-rounded human being. Now, you know, all of us have heard this saying that, you know, sports develops character. Mm-hmm. You know, but I would like to add something before that, which is sports reveals character.
Reveals.
And then you can use it to either develop it further or make it worse. That choice is yours, right? So you've seen a lot of kids who've gone through tennis and they've just basically become nutcases, right? They've become nutcases. So they've gone the other way. And there are kids who probably didn't believe in themselves as much, but as human beings, but as they kept playing sport and along their journey, they just started believing in themselves more because that's what the sport taught them. Mm-hmm. So I think sport can reveal your character, mm-hmm. and then it's your choice whether you want to use it to develop it further in a positive manner, in a good manner that helps you a lot, or, you know, it just falls by the wayside.
So speaking of revealing your character, I'm curious, as how many years, so it's two part. Firstly, like how many years have you been running this tournament?
In 2019, I was appointed the captain of the Indian Billie Jean King Cup team, which used to be called Fed Cup. Mm-hmm. And when I got on the team, you know, I really started watching women's tennis closely, especially in India. And I realized that there's so much potential in Indian women's tennis, which is extremely untapped and no one really cares about it. So I made a conscious decision that, look, I'm going to try and do more and more women's events. Mm-hmm. So this is the fifth ITF World Ranking event that I'm hosting since 2022.
Nice.
So and it's not easy raising money for these tournaments in India. There were a couple of ITF 15Ks in which I had to put money from my own pocket because we couldn't raise sponsorship. But I've been determined since, 4 years or so to really support women's tennis in India. So this is the fifth tournament that we're doing for women. We've mm-hmm. done one for men, which was a $15,000 event. And 2 weeks, 1 week after this tournament, we have an ITF Junior World Ranking event, which will be our fifth ITF Junior World Ranking event that we'll mm-hmm. be doing. So the Tennis Project is definitely one of the venues which is really looking to promote tennis in India in a holistic manner, mm-hmm. not just about coaching, but also giving opportunities to our players through competition, because you train to play competitions, and if you don't have the opportunity to play competition, training becomes pointless, right? So that's what we're aiming to do here. It's a lot of hard work. It's an uphill task, to be honest. But seeing the response that I've got for this week, I'm very enthused that going forward, we'll get more and more support from corporate India, and hopefully we'll be able to do a lot more tournaments.
How do you get started making like a ITF event like this?
Oh, okay. So I'm sure every country has their own procedures, but in India, firstly, I have to have the intent and the desire to do something because I've got to raise all the money. Mm-hmm. So once I want to do an event, because we're situated in the state of Haryana in India, so I have to apply to the Haryana Tennis Association, which in turn applies to the All India Tennis Association, which in turn applies to the International Tennis Federation for the sanctioning mm-hmm. that we would like to do this event. And then the sanction process comes through, and then you're allotted the tournament, and then your job as the tournament host, or for me as tournament director, is to make sure I raise all the funding for the tournament, for the expenses. Mm-hmm. My facility is in good shape. It meets all the parameters laid down by the International Tennis Federation of hosting an event. Mm-hmm. So the quality of the courts, the size of the court has to be according to what the ITF wants. And basically set everything up, set up the hotel for the players so that they have convenience, give them transportation, make sure the balls are good on court, there's enough water, all the nitty-gritty that goes into, preparing for a tournament. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other part is the referee and the umpires, so I got to take care of them also. They obviously have a fee and we pay the fee, and their travel and accommodation is looked after by us, but the technical running of the tournament, which is making the draws and anything on court, mm-hmm. That comes under the purview of the ITF referee. Mm-hmm. So the ITF referee becomes the technical boss of the tournament, whereas mm-hmm. as tournament director, I'm the overall boss of the.
So they bring over an ITF referee.
Yes.
From
so every
so there's one right here right now.
Yes.
Right?
So every tournament has to have an ITF referee, and they have to have. Four ITF certified umpires and two local umpires are allowed, so you have to make sure that there is all this logistical stuff in place, mm-hmm. and once the ITF supervisor or the ITF referee comes in, and then it's their show in terms of making the draws and making the schedules and anything on court, mm. whether it's a line call or a questionable call or a judgment ruling, the ITF referee does that. I have no role to play in it.
So you would say you handle mostly like the logistics of how the tournament is going to be hosted and ran?
Yes.
And then the ITF referee comes in and does the ITF, like the more tennis oriented
yes,
tournament?
Yes, the technical stuff, like making the draws, stuff mm-hmm. like that, that's up to the ITF referee. I have no say in it. Mm-hmm. I can at best decide the wild cards for the tournament. And if I want certain matches to be put on the show court, I can tell the ITF referee that I'd like this match played on this court. Mm-hmm. So if you'll see this week, all the Indians are playing on court number one mm-hmm. because we want the Indian interest to be there. So yeah, so that is my stuff. And then other than that, this week, you know, we've held a pro-am event for the first time in India, which has never happened. So we did a pro-am event on Saturday. Then Sunday night, I decided to host a players' party.
Yeah, I know. I saw the flyers.
And we made it a karaoke night. So the players were singing because I just wanted to make it fun and different for the players, you know. So, so you know, it's my job to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Last year for the same tournament, because the players gave such a incredible feedback to the ITF about the way we hosted it, the ITF sent me a recognition award for being the best tournament hosted in India. Yeah, so that was quite good. So this year, you know, I've tried my heart and soul to make it an even better tournament, and I hope the players have loved it and appreciated it.
That's really cool to see how it all works, and congrats for doing it. I think tennis needs more people who put their heart and soul into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and not also like expecting anything in return.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'm a tennis player at heart.
Yeah.
More than anything else, you know, and what drives me to doing all this stuff and taking all these risks of raising all this money and capital is the fact that when I was growing up, like I said, I got to play 8 at best 10 tournaments in a year. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want this generation and the generations coming ahead to face the same challenges we did. You know, like, I mean, in hindsight, I can only say how good I could have been. Yeah. Nobody's going to find out, including me. Because we didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
We didn't have the money to travel abroad. So for me, what drives me is the fact that I want to give more and more Indian players an opportunity to compete at an international level. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to their hard work. You know, they will not have the regret that we didn't have opportunities. Mm-hmm. So that's what really drives me to, you know, go out there and try and put these tournaments together and, you know, host them.
That's really awesome. When you mentioned that you were playing for a Davis Cup team, mm-hmm. how many years? You said 6?
Yeah, from 2000 to 2006, I was a part of the team.
Was Leander Paes?
Yeah, so I made my debut against South Korea in New Delhi. And Leander and I played doubles in that match, in that tie.
How was that?
And it was a match I'll never forget in my life. Even 24 years later, you ask me anything about that match, and I remember because that was the match of my life. I played the best tennis I've probably ever played.
Yeah.
And also in a very pressure cooker match because we were playing a very strong Korean team. Korea had Hyung Taek Lee and Yoon Young-il. Both were top 100 players. I think Yoon Young-il was 104 and Hyung Taek Lee was about 90. And next year, Hyung Taek Lee became top 40. Mm-hmm. And it was a must-win match for us because we knew Leander would, on grass, win both his singles. And we knew our number two player would lose both his singles. So the doubles match became very crucial. So for me to play that match and not only play that match, be the best player on that court on that particular day.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. So, you know, the Korean captain at the end of the tie actually said that you threw in this guy and that's why you won. Otherwise, we were sure we were going to win doubles. Uh-huh. And you know, I mean, it's been my dream as I was a kid to play for India. That's mm-hmm. all I've always wanted to do. Play for India, do good for India because I come from an army background. My grandfather was an army man. So I've been brought up with a lot of, you know, nationalistic pride. Like, you know, I want to see India succeed as a country and do well. And so for me to play for India was the biggest dream. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't dream of winning Wimbledon. I dreamt of playing for India and winning for India. Mm-hmm. And when I achieved that, you know, that was a big, yes, I've done it kind of a thing for me, mm-hmm. you know. And then, of course, in 2002, when I won an Asian Games medal, that was huge. The experience of playing alongside Leander was fabulous. He was world number one at that time. And I was world number 700 and something.
Yeah.
You know, but for us to combine and beat a team that was top 100 almost.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty big.
Wow.
Yeah, we beat them 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, 7-6.
3 out of 5 sets.
Yeah, 3 out of full sets.
Wow.
There was no super tiebreaker. Full sets. Yeah. So yeah.
That's sick. And so, did you ever play the Olympics?
No, I never got to the Olympics. No.
No. Yeah, it was like the certain, I guess, like ranking was.
Yes, because your ranking had to be a lot higher. And then plus, Leander and Mahesh were the number one doubles pairing in India.
So they get the spot.
Rightly so, because you know they'd won so many Grand Slams together and stuff. So yeah, they were always the people ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. So then I think a good segue is from Davis Cup over to a Fed Cup, or what is it called now?
Billie Jean King Cup, yeah.
Billie Jean King Cup. You were the captain of it from...
Yeah, so from 2019 till 2022, mm-hmm. I was the captain of the team. But before that, you know, I retired playing tennis in 2007, early 2007. And then in 2010, I was appointed Junior Davis Cup captain for India. Mm-hmm. And I was the captain for 6 years, and out of which we went to the world group, the elite world group, which is 16 teams all over the world. We went there 3 times. So that was a pretty nice. Pretty good thing for me. And then in 2019, I was given the responsibility of the Billie Jean King Cup. And in our 42-year history, we had always either been in Asia Oceania Group 1 or Asia Oceania Group 2, and we'd never progressed to the World Group playoff stage. Mm-hmm. And then in 2020, under my captaincy, we finally did it. Mm-hmm. So that was a very big moment, not just for me personally, but also for the Indian women's tennis movement, as I call it, because I think that gave a lot of the youngsters you see today belief. And, you know, that hunger that, hey, we want to do this again. You know, we've achieved it once and we want to do it again. So I was a part of the team for a good part of 3.5-4 years. And, mm-hmm. I learned a lot from the girls. And I became a big fan of women's tennis in India.
Was Mirza playing on the team at that
yes,
time?
Yes, she'd played doubles. The year we qualified in 2020 in Dubai, she was a part of... She played doubles in that tie. And so as captain, I'm, you know, obviously it's a women's event and I'm the non-playing captain. But it's my responsibility and duty to make sure that the players are ready to compete. Who plays number one singles, who plays number two singles, who plays doubles. Mm-hmm. Those are all calls I have to take. And, thankfully the calls I made worked well in our favor. Mm-hmm. So we achieved something that we've never achieved. I have, in my entire trophy cabinet, I have one pink medal, which is from that Billie Jean King Cup tie in Dubai in 2020, and I cherish that very much.
What's one of the toughest decisions you had to make as captain?
You know, as a captain, one of the toughest decisions always is to make is to who to play, because you know all the players want to play. Yeah. But it's your job to try and do the best for the team, the way you look at it, the way you see it. I mean, if you see a player, they might be higher in the rankings, but maybe they're not sharp enough just to make them sit out for a tie. You know, so you got to take these tough calls. But at the end of the day, you have to make them without any bias. You have to make them very dispassionately, because your interest has to be the team, not the individual.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, Sanya was very keen to play doubles with Rutuja in that particular qualification event. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Ankita was playing much better tennis than Rutuja. And I told Sanya that, look, you need to play with Ankita, because she will give you the stability that you need, and then you can take over. Mm-hmm. And you know what? We played 3 deciding doubles matches and we won all 3.
Hey.
So, you know, that's... when your decision goes right, you know, there's not much anybody can say. So you got to take these tough calls. And at the end of the day, you've got to make sure the team is well looked after. Everything is provided for the team. Mm-hmm. You've got to make sure the National Tennis Federation is giving or providing enough funding for the team to do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. So you have to do a lot of this stuff. And at the end of the day, you have to sit on the court with the players, and you're the only one who can give them any advice on what to do. In anything tactical or something, it's basically on you. So it was a great challenge. I loved every minute of it. And let's see what happens in the future.
What's the process like when deciding who is going to be on the team? Do you base it mostly on ranking?
So basically, that is decided by the selection committee of the All India Tennis Association. They sit down and they decide, and they invite the captain into that meeting. Just to give his or her viewpoints on who they would like in the team, and mm-hmm. So you give your viewpoint, and then the selection committee decides who gets selected.
They don't have like a playoffs kind of like for the spots?
No, you don't have a playoff for the spots. They look at world rankings. They look at, you know, who's playing good tennis at that time, if anybody's coming off an injury and maybe rusty. And so they take a look at a few parameters.
Kind of going back, I missed this question because you started talking about some more interesting stuff. But going back to when we were talking about how sport and tennis reveals character, what's one of like the more crazier things they've seen happen on court from some of the players?
Oh, I mean, you come across all sorts of players, you know, right through your playing career also. We had guys, you know, who were absolute gentlemen, very nice guys, and we made good friends with them, and we continue to remain friends. And there were guys who were absolute nut jobs, very disrespectful, very rude, and you don't really care much about them. So we've seen all sorts of, you know, crazy people out there on the court, you know, abusive, you know, not nice, just nasty. And then there are people who, you know, you develop a great camaraderie with it. And and you say that, it's not just on the court, even when you travel. You know, you meet so many interesting people. So we went to play Australia in Adelaide in 2002. And if anybody follows Australian sport, they have a cheerleading squad called the Fanatics. So you'll all see them in the Aussie gold t-shirts, and they're all cheering together. And we were playing a very strong Australian team. Leighton Hewitt was world number one.
Aussies, sorry to cut you off. Aussies, I feel like they're like notorious for being like the rowdiest, craziest fans.
So we were playing Leighton Hewitt, who was world number one, had just won US Open. And Todd Woodbridge was also world number one in doubles and had just won US Open doubles. And the other team, Wayne Arthurs, was top 40 in the world. So they had a very strong team. Yeah. And we had a very slim chance against them. But we put up a great fight. You know, we fought hard. We lost close matches. So in that sense, the experience was good. So on the last day, we lost a tie 3-0. And on the last day, the Fanatics were there. And there was one guy, Darren Smith, who used to play the trumpet for them, who was like the chair who got them going. And these guys had been taking the piss out of us the whole week. You know, they had been at it with us. So I decided to walk up into the stands in my entire Indian jersey. And I went stood right next to Darren Smith. And I said, now you're going to do a cheer for India. And they couldn't believe it, that somebody had the guts to walk up to us, sit in the middle of us wearing the Indian uniform and saying, you do. And they did a cheer for us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was amazing. And then, and then they did a cheer for me because they couldn't believe it. It was that crazy, right? And in the evening, then they threw a party for us. We went to that party. We hung out with these guys. And I think 8 years later, I was his best man at his wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And till today, we continue to be brothers. And we call each other brothers from different mothers. And so you know, tennis takes you to different places in the world. You meet some incredible people. You make friendships for life. You become brothers, and you come across some real jackasses who you don't care about. So that's the way it goes.
Yeah. The only reason I'm here right today, kind of in general, is I met Sharmada at a wedding. I came to India a few years ago in 2019. Do you know Rishika?
Sungara, course.
So I went to her wedding.
Oh, nice.
She was working, she was teaching tennis in New York with my brother.
Oh, yeah? Whereabouts in New York?
In McCarran Park in Brooklyn.
Okay, because I spent 19 summers in New York because my coach was in West Hampton. I used to go there every summer.
This is in the city.
Yeah.
So Rishika, my brother, were working together, and she was there for me in the U.S. for only, I think, like 2 years. And then she's like, okay, I'm going back to India, getting married. And then my brother's like, can I come? And she's like, yeah, sure. And we actually went. And she didn't think my brother was being serious. She thought that he was joking around. And so we came to India. And so because she was a tennis player, it was a whole tennis crew. I met Saujanya.
Yeah.
I met Sharmada, a few others. And then I kept in contact with them. And then it turns out, I thought it was going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to come to go to an Indian wedding. That was a South Indian wedding.
You don't want to miss that. Next time, try and get to an North Indian one. That's even crazier.
So get yeah. this. Turns out I'm back in India for another wedding.
Yeah, there you go.
And this one is in the north in Amritsar.
Oh, good. So that's going to be crazy to a different level.
Yeah. And so I was in Australia in January for the Australian Open, shooting some stuff. I did a couple interviews, tennis content, blah, blah, blah. And then I had the wedding in March.
Hmm?
It's next week, in a few days. And I was like, I can go to Australia and then come back and then go back to India and then come back, or I could just stay in Asia during that time. And so I ended up staying in Asia. I went to Philippines. I was in Thailand. Nice. And then I came to India a few days. My brother arrives in a couple days. I came here a few days early to see Sharmada. I did an interview with her yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Check out the tournament venue. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to have met you. Tomorrow I'm going to the Challenger event in
Delhi.
New Delhi.
Yeah.
And tennis is precisely, you know, tennis is, you know, granted, I have like the trip was like partly for like for my podcast and to grow it, but it turned into so much more. Especially while I was in the Philippines, I had the reason I went there is because I had a friend, one of my friends, she's who lives in New York. She's from there. She's like, oh, I'm gonna be visiting family for, you know. I told her I'm gonna be in Asia. She's like, oh, I'm gonna be visiting family. I'm like, all right, I'm going to Philippines, and then she connected me with her tennis friend, and then from there. I played tennis a couple times in Manila, and then I was taking a bus to go to, well, it was a 1 hour flight to go to Palawan, which is another island. But instead I was like, let me take a bus, a ferry, a bus, another ferry, and then a bus to get to where I need to go. Cause I was going to meet my friend there. And on one of the islands, I arrived on Wednesday to the port. Because I read online, it's every single day. There's like once a day, there's a ferry. Turns out it wasn't leaving until Saturday. So I'm like, shit, what am I gonna do? So we went up, we took the bus like another like 2 hours, it was 5 hours from the previous place. We went up 2 hours to like another small town. We're just walking around and I find tennis courts. I'm like, yes, tennis courts. And there were a bunch of kids over there as well. And I'm like, I'm talking to them through the fence. I'm like, you guys want to play tennis? They're like, yeah, let's play tennis. And so I'm hitting a few shots, and every time I would hit the ball or hit between my legs or something, like, they went crazy. It was like, it was some random tennis courts in the middle of the Philippines that just, I was able to like, you know, make their day, and I met some of the other people. And that thing, it actually really inspired me to, similar to how you are trying to push Tennis India, Indian tennis, and give players the opportunities that you didn't have growing up. I always had like in back of my mind, like, you know, that's something I wanted to do as well, because tennis has given me so much that like, I feel like I just wouldn't be doing right if I didn't give the same thing to other people. And that particular experience was like, I think that's the door opening. It's like, this is a very direct way where I could figure out ways to give back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think on that note, I think we can wrap it up.
Yep.
I think really cool to hear about your experience. I didn't expect it, to be honest. No, you know, no offense. I'm like,
no, that's fine.
Sharmada, she's like, oh yeah, he's Captain Davis Cup. I'm like, oh, and then you're telling me you played for our Fed Cup, and then you're like, oh, I played for Davis Cup. I'm like, what? Where did this come from?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think what you're doing is very inspiring.
Thank you.
I think, and the fact, you know, you have the national pride, the way you were telling me that your Davis Cup experience was like, you know, like it really, it felt very, very fulfilling.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, you pushed men's tennis. You pushed women's tennis, and you're pushing junior tennis on the national scale, which is really not a small feat. It is huge. And I think I was speaking to one of the other coaches here. She's from Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And she was mentioning, like, back in the day when she was growing up, they had, I forgot the guy's name, but they had a couple, like, good players. and then now Thailand doesn't really have anybody.
Paradon Tree Chapan and Danai Udumchok.
Yeah, and now they don't have like the same caliber, and there's a lack of, I think, inspiration, you know, role models, motivation.
Yeah.
And I think you play a very pivotal role in that for Indian tennis, and I hope you can continue to grow the tournament, grow your tennis influence, bring more players into the sport, and push more players, you know, to great heights. I don't think there's any shortage of talent in India. I don't know why India is, if they do one thing right, they know how to make doubles players.
We need to find better athletes for singles. You need to be a much better athlete for singles, yeah.
Similarly, at least in New York, every time I was playing against like an Indian player, they always had like the softest hands. They have unbelievable touch. And maybe that's also part of the doubles magic.
Yep, it is.
All right, well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yep.
If you don't mind, we're going to say stay tipsy.
All right.
Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Stay tipsy. All right, that was good.
Awesome.
Thanks, mate. All right, I guess I got to do some duties.
Yeah, and if you have to go, you can take care of it. And I can edit. Cut some things out. So if I'm not mistaken, Sharmada told me you're the captain for the Fed Cup team as well.
I was for 3 years.
You were.
Yeah. Last year I was fired.
You're fired.
Yeah, because the team got to the World Group playoffs for the first time in our history.
Anyway, so cool. So let's just start.